Good afternoon, friends of opera and friends of the students at the University of Western Ontario who are studying voice and hope to break into the very esoteric and beautiful world of opera at some point or other. I want to first of all welcome you to, I don't know how many of these we have had, but we've given over 200 scholarships over the course of the years from the London Opera Guild to the students of the Faculty of Music. And we hope to continue this as long as the money holds out. Which brings me to another favorite point of mine, and that is your donations. Remember that in the good old days when $20 seemed to be a high price to pay for music? Not anymore. Nowadays, if you really want to contribute to music, you have to think in terms of two or three times more. If you have already made a donation, when you've heard the students, you will be moved to increase your donation. And this money goes into the scholarship fund and makes it possible for us to give more scholarships to students at the Faculty of Music. I want to thank this church, and in particular the rector, Michael Bruce, and the director of music, Steve Hollowitz, for their very kind attitude toward cultural events in this church, and particularly to their long-standing support of the London Opera Guild. This is something that one cannot take for granted, and it's part of this church's notion that it's not only the physical needs of people that need to be looked after, but their cultural, their spiritual, and their intellectual needs as well. For those who are not familiar with this church, the washroom is through two doors and then immediately to your right. I want to also thank Professor Patricia Green, who is the coordinator for all of these activities at the faculty level. And we really, really appreciate her very important work in this from our standpoint in the Opera Guild. It is a pleasure to work with Professor Green, and she always knows what she is doing, not only in teaching students, but in helping to organize events like this. I'd also like to thank John Gardy, who is recording this. John is our in-house recordist, but he also has his own program on Western Radio. And this concert will be broadcast sometime in the future at an unearthly hour in the early morning. But you can also get online in the church website and find ways of getting to hear the music if you're not up at 1 o'clock in the morning, as most of us aren't. We have handed out the scholarships already, and I would at this point welcome Sarah Bowker, the collaborative pianist who introduces these programs and is the fabulous orchestra behind all of the students. I would ask you to welcome the students into the hall.
Good afternoon, and welcome to this afternoon's Opera Guild concert. We're all thrilled to be here. We have a really fun afternoon of music to present to you, and we really appreciate your being here. My name is Sarah Bowker. I will be playing the piano. I have the pleasure of working with these fine musicians, but also I get to tell you a little bit about all the things that we're going to be performing today, and hopefully there will be a little bit of useful information that you get to walk away with. Mozart's 1790 opera, Così fan tutte, was only performed about 5 times in his lifetime, and only a handful of times over the next 150 years. The subject matter wasn't too offensive for Viennese audiences of his time, but quickly it was deemed to be too risque, vulgar, and even immoral for audiences of the 19th and early 20th centuries. Consequently, it was rarely performed. And when it was usually in a Baudelaireized version, This name comes from the brother and sister team of Thomas and Henrietta Bodler, who were known for publishing The Family Shakespeare, a sanitized version of Shakespeare's plays deemed appropriate for Victorian women and children. Not sure exactly what those would look like. As a worldly 21st century audience, we might be able to handle the plot, so I will explain a bit of it to you. That is, of course, for those of you that weren't able to make it to the Western Opera production in the fall. The two officers, Ferrando and Guglielmo, are acting on a bet from Don Alfonso that they can get their fiancés, the sisters Fiordiligi and Dorabella, to be unfaithful. They trick the ladies into thinking that the men are going off to war, and then they reappear in different clothing, naturally causing the ladies to think that they're completely different men, Albanian princes. At first, the ladies are having none of this. Fiordiligi sings Come Scoglio, in which she states that she will stand firm and faithful, and nothing will change her mind. Apparently, Mozart disliked the prima donna Adriana Ferrarese, who was to be singing this role, knowing of her tendency to drop her chin on low notes and throw back her head on high notes. Mozart filled this aria with large leaps in order to make her bob like a chicken on stage. Sorry, Josephine. But back to our beleaguered sisters. In Svanie Implacabili, Dorabella tells us how distraught she is, and she will never be consoled. However, in the aria In Uomini, their maid Despina tells them that they're idiots to trust in the fidelity of men, especially soldiers. Consequently, the sisters are open to suggestion from the Albanian princes, and Dorabella receives a heart-shaped locket from Guglielmo in the duet Il Core Vi Dono. So now we will present several selections from the opera Così Fan Tutte by Mozart.
Nostro cor, nostro orecchio e nostri affetti. Thank you.
My job here is to explain some of the context and plot of these arias and to provide a few fun facts about the operas they come from. The main reason for this is that most of these arias are sung in a language other than English, and so I can tell you a bit of what they are about in English. The problem is that English is such a plain, unpoetic language. Take Inuktitut, for example. The Inuit have many words for snow. To name just a few, we have kanik, snow that is falling, aputi, snow on the ground, pukak, granular snow on the ground, anyu, snow used to make water, maujak, soft snow. I could keep going, there are many more. The Greeks define many types of love. We have eros, passionate or romantic love, philia, friendship or brotherly love, agape, which is unconditional, selfless, charitable, or divine love. Storge, familial love. Ludus, playful or flirtatious love. Pragma, long-standing practical love that exists in long-term relationships. And philautia, which is self-love. If I tell you that the next few arias are just about love, which many of them are, we are potentially missing the nuance of exactly what is being expressed. In the aria Avant de quitter ces lieux from Gounod's Faust, the character Valentin is expressing storge, familial love, as he asks God to watch over his sister Marguerite while he is away at war. In the famous aria Pour Giamor from The Marriage of Figaro, the countess despairs of her philandering husband, but still loves him with the pragma of a long-term understanding relationship. And finally, Don Giovanni employs ludus shamelessly, flirtatiously attracting his next conquest to the window. Saying all of these arias are about love is accurate, but not at all correct. Here we have three operatic visions of love.
Je viens de ma sœur. cherche la gloire, la course des ennemis. Le premier, le plus brave, au fort de la mêlée. J'irai combattre pour mon pays. Et si vers lui Dieu me rappelle, je veillerai sur toi fidèle.
Agli occhi tuoi, no.
Since most operas aren't in Greek or Inuktuk, we evidently don't have enough specific words for everything, and there's a great deal of possibility for misunderstandings and shenanigans. Two operas legendary for shenanigans are Die Fledermaus by Johann Strauss and Le Nozze di Figaro by Mozart. In Fledermaus, which I'm sure you all saw last year at Western Opera's production, much of the action takes place at a ball hosted by Prince Orlovsky, at which half of the guests are disguised as someone or something else. While introducing himself in the aria Ich lade gern mir Gäste ein, Prince Orlovsky boasts about his eclectic tastes and love for entertainment. Mozart's opera The Marriage of Figaro tells how the servants Figaro and Susanna managed to succeed in getting married, despite the scheming manipulations of their employer, the Count, and the elderly jealous relatives, Marcellina and Dr. Bartolo. In the aria Se vuol ballare, Figaro has just figured out that his employer, the Count, has set up his living situation to allow himself easy access to Figaro's soon-to-be wife. Figaro vows that if the Count wants to dance, Figaro will play the tune.
Io corriero e la Susanna.
ambasciatrice non sarà Figaro il vice. Se vuol ballare, signor Contino, se vuol ballare, signor Contino, il chitarrino le suonerò, il chitarrino le suonerò, sì, le suonerò, sì, le suonerò.
Another Greek love concept, aren't you glad you're learning things today? Is mania, which they used to describe obsessive, imbalanced love, where an intense, irrational, and often possessive passion consumes a person. This is something that opera is really good at. The basis for the libretto of Herodiade came from a story written by Gustave Flaubert in 1877, which also inspired Oscar Wilde's Zalome and Richard Strauss's Zalome. It recounts the death of John the Baptist at the hands of Herod, but incited by his wife Herodias, who is angry that John insulted her in the past. Herod consumes a potion that gives him hallucinatory visions of Salome. This aria captures his intense desire for and obsession with Salome. Eros or mania? The plot of Un ballo in maschera concerns the 1792 assassination of King Gustav III of Sweden, who was shot as the result of a political conspiracy while attending, you guessed it, a masked ball. Composing this opera was one of the most frustrating experiences of Verdi's career. Over the course of 2 years, it underwent a series of revisions and title changes due to frequent visits from the censorship fairies. Depicting a monarch on stage, much less a monarch's murder, was an absolute no-no. Therefore, the characters' names and stations were changed several times, and the location was moved to various places, eventually Boston. Verdi did keep the historical character of the fortune teller Ulrika Arvidsson. Duke Ricardo, aka King Gustav, visits Ulrika in disguise, and she famously predicts that the next man to shake his hand will be his killer. In this aria, she summons her magical powers by calling on the king of the abyss. So first, a selection from Herodiade, and then Un ballo in maschera.
Se
Although much of opera is driven by love, a lot of it also hinges on the tension, and sometimes the tragedy, that occurs when love is not returned. The Greeks call this anteros, which is the opposite of eros. In the opera Giuditta by Franz Lehár, the title character leaves her husband to run off with the army captain Octavio. However, Octavio's army obligations require him to relocate, and he refuses to desert. Over the subsequent years, they continue to almost connect, but not quite, frequently living and working in different cities, but then somehow running into each other again. Giuditta spends much of the opera searching for true love, and in this aria sings about how on her lips every kiss is like wine. Sadly, when she does finally confess her love for Octavio after many years, he's a broken man and he no longer believes in love. In the opera I Pagliacci by Ruggiero Leoncavallo, Nedda and Silvio are in love with each other, but she is married to Canio. Canio has a violent temper and a jealous streak that frightens Nedda, so Silvio urges her to run away with him. In this aria, he asks her if she wants to live forever with these dangers and worries. If she truly doesn't love Canio anymore, he will take her away tonight.
Ich hab das gleich los.
Finally, some arias in English. The opera Flight by Jonathan Dove is actually based on the true story of Mehran Karimi Nasseri, an Iranian refugee who lived at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris for 18 years, unable to exit the airport terminal. The story served as the inspiration for the plot of the film Terminal, starring Tom Hanks, with music by John Williams. Dove centers the story of the man trapped in the terminal by juxtaposing him against several other characters, all in different stages of life, all in transit, and all stranded temporarily in the airport during a snowstorm. This aria, "I Bought This Suitcase in New York," is sung by the character Minx Woman, who is pregnant and on the brink of childbirth. The musical Sweeney Todd is based on the villain from the penny dreadful serial The String of Pearls, published in London in 1846. There are claims that Sweeney Todd was in fact an historical person, but they are disputed. A fact that is not disputed is that Sweeney Todd is being produced by Western Opera with performances March 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. Mark your calendars. I don't want to give away the milk for free here, but the bare bones are that Todd is a barber who murders his customers with a straight razor and gives the corpses to his neighbor, Mrs. Lovett, who bakes their flesh into pies. The worst pies in London are made with Soylent Green. Meanwhile, the evil Judge Turpin has kidnapped Todd's daughter, Joanna, and keeps her locked in the attic. The young man, Antony, has fallen in love with her from afar and vows to free her.
Dress, bright blue, and some beautiful shoes. Only I can hardly blame them. These are probably the worst boys in London.
Verdi composed Nabucco at a difficult moment in his life. His wife and small children had all just died of various illnesses. Despite a vow to abstain from opera writing, he had contracted with La Scala to write another opera, and the director, Bartolomeo Morelli, forced the libretto into his hands. Returning home, Verdi happened to open the libretto at Va Pensiero, and seeing the phrase, he heard the words singing. At the first rehearsal, the stagehands shouted their approval, then beat on the floor and the sets with their tools to create an even noisier demonstration of appreciation. Subsequently, Verdi felt that this was the opera with which his artistic career really began, saying, "Though I had many difficulties to fight against, it is certain that Nabucco was born under a lucky star." Upon Verdi's death, along his funeral's cortege in the streets of Milan, bystanders started spontaneous choruses of Va Pensiero. A month later, when he was reinterred alongside his wife at the Casa di Riposo, a young Arturo Toscanini conducted a choir of 800 in the famous hymn. In 2011, after conducting Va Pensiero during a performance of Nabucco at the Teatro dell'Opera in Rome, Riccardo Muti made a short speech protesting cuts in Italy's art budget, then asked the audience to sing along in support of culture and patriotism. Although we are only 5 singers and not 800, we offer thanks for your generous offering of time and money in support of music today. We hope you've enjoyed our operatic offerings, and I'm sure you join me in being excited to see where these young talents end up.
Thank you.
any of you wish to renew your membership in the Opera Guild, I don't know if this is on.
It's on.
Okay. Alice Kirk is sitting right there. Would you stand up, Alice, please? And she is happy to accept your membership. It's $30 a year. If you've never been a member, you can always join now. And I hope to see you again at our next concert. Thank you very much for coming. Give one more round of applause to our soloist. Thank you very much.